Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast, No Bad Dogs. As always, I hope you guys are well. Thank you for listening. This is an excellent episode with dog owners with three different dogs, and two of them are fighting, and so they've worked with other trainers, they've gone to board and trained, and they're just focusing on the wrong thing, which is, I want my dogs to get along. How do we get my dogs to get along, right? Well, they're not going to get along. There's a good chance they're not going to get along. Not every dog's get along. So what do you do? What's the roadmap here? That's what this episode is about. As always, you guys, we got some cool all my Black Friday sales. If you're listening to this around the holidays, they're linked in the description below, as well as we have a seminar this weekend at the Upstate Canine Academy. I'll link below. I'm super excited about that. All of our courses, all that fun stuff. So thank you guys for listening. Enjoy this podcast. Have a lovely day. Don't forget to have fun with life, because life is short. All right, guys. Bye. All right. Cool. Nice to meet you.
Likewise.
So what's going on?
Well, I guess one main thing, we got three dogs.
Okay.
One dog we've had for about 7-8 years. Almost 3 years ago, we got two puppies. All three are girls. The first year, the two young puppies were fine together. And then kind of somewhere after the 1 year mark, one of the puppies kind of started, fighting with the other little puppy. And now, mind you, like the two little girls, they're one's 30 pounds, the other one's 12, 13 pounds, Chihuahua mixes. And so for about the last 2 years now, we've been dealing with, you know, seemingly about every 2 to 3, 3 to 4 weeks of some sort of fight going on in the house. And we initially started with your reactive to neutral program, did all that stuff, did all that training. You know, we saw improvements in the obedience, but we still couldn't kind of curb the fighting. And so we you know, went to another trainer here in Phoenix, where it was like a board and train. And so the two puppies, they were each boarded separately for 2 weeks and then together for a third week. And then they came home and we did some training, and that still hasn't really curbed any of the fighting. So we're looking for answers to figure out kind of what can we do to help our one dog not fight. Cause we're kind of like on pins and needles. And I guess the way the tech kind of describe her, it's almost like she's a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Cause it's not like she fights all the time. I mean, like the dogs can play together nicely. Kind of like they did when we first got them home that first year, but there'll be one small little trigger that we can't quite identify. And she just goes from 0 to 100 in the blink of an eye. And, like with the little dog, if she gets a hold of her, I mean, she's, you know, gonna kind of scratch her and put holes in her and stuff like that. So it just kind of scares the pants off us.
Okay. And how old are they right now, you said?
About
3.5.
Okay.
Sorry, his wife's here too. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. Okay, so just by what you've told me, we'll dive into it, but just by what you've told me, if some dogs just don't like each other, and there's nothing you could do. That's it. I mean, that's like the blunt end of a lot of these types of scenarios. And, you know, obviously for me working with dogs, I do see this a lot. And here's a couple things that I notice in these types of situations that even you guys have said to me and that you're dealing with is I think we have unrealistic expectations a lot of times where it's very, very, from a professional standpoint, from my standpoint, it's very, very, very common for two dogs to not like each other. It doesn't matter if they're sisters, brothers, they've lived with each other. It's more common than you would think. It's really, it's sad. It's all of the things that we don't like, and we're going to do everything we can to not, to get rid of it, really. And that, those are the things that you guys were talking about is we've hired, you know, we've taken courses, you've taken my online course, you've hired trainers, you've spent all this money trying to take something out that will never come out. And so the light at the end of the tunnel is if you guys change the way that you're handling the scenario and you change your expectations, things will pretty, in my opinion and my experience, immediately get better. Because I find a lot of people trying to put this square in a round hole and they're like, I want them to get along. I don't want them to fight. I want them to coexist peacefully. And the reality is if one of them is the antagonist and or they both just will fight randomly, if it's a Cheerio that fell on the ground or one of you guys gets up to get water on the couch and they have a situation, the reality is they are not compatible with one another. And there's obviously two big things that make it more frustrating is obviously you want your pack to be happy and healthy with each other, and you know that's without saying, but they got along early on in their lives because they were puppies. And so puppies, just like humans, when they mature, both physically and mentally, they change, I mean, drastically from who they were, right? Like all the things that we did when we were little babies, we obviously would never do now, right? The things that we're interested in, the food that we eat, things like this. And so I see a lot of dog owners go down this frustrating, expensive journey of getting the dog. And sometimes it's obviously hope, right? I mean, I'm a dog owner myself. I'm a dog lover myself. If my dogs didn't get along, it would be very stressful. It doesn't take any of that away. Just because it makes sense doesn't mean it makes it easier. So I find that you have two dogs, and this is just what I'm hearing from you, and then we can kind of chat about it, but we have three dogs. It seems like the older one's kind of out of this little fight circle, or is it the older dog fighting with one of the younger dogs?
So it's mostly just the two younger dogs fighting together.
Sisters,
however,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, so like
no,
when the...
No, they're not sisters.
Well, not from the same litter.
No.
Oh.
They're both just rescues.
I got you. Got them at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
So when the two little ones start fighting, the third older dog will kind of jump in and just start attacking as well for no reason other than the other two are fighting, why not her? But for the most part, like she started a fight once and that seems kind of like a one-off. But for the most part, like for the 8 years that we've had her, we had her with two other older dogs who've since passed on. There's never any issues of fighting. It's just kind of been a recent thing with the two little ones fighting that she's right. Gotten into the mix, not starting it herself.
Okay. Okay. So it seems, like I said, it seems to me continuing that is the two younger dogs compared to the 8 year old, the three and a half year olds, they are the ones that are having a hard time. So, I mean, we can talk about, okay, so common reasons, right, would be, and I don't think this is applicable because it's random. If it's random, that means that they likely just don't like each other. So if it was resource guarding, you could pinpoint it on food or toys or you or attention or love or couch or chair. These are things that I see commonly. It could be some sort of pain or like if a dog, you know, things that are very kind of a stretch to say. I mean, they're possible, but to me, from what you've told me, because of the randomness. Now, if you turn around and said, hey, we have 2 3-year-olds and one of them always goes after the other one, if, boom, then I would say, okay, there's a trigger. There's a reason. There's some sort of thing that we can say this is the cause of this. Now, if they're just randomly fighting, where without any trigger or without any reason, typically that means that, and I would just say 99% of the time, that typically would mean that they just don't get along. So you'll be fine one day. You may even, I've had clients fine for a month, fine for a week. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, one of them doesn't get a walk that day, or the other one looks at the other one the wrong way when you walk in and give them attention, whatever the little tiny, not real reason, but reason it happens. It just means that it's like very childish behavior too. You get like two grown-ups fighting for no reason and you're like, you guys are just idiots, I guess. I don't know. Like, so when you get two dogs that are fighting, it's like they don't really have a problem with, they have a problem not with dogs entirely. So my point is this, is you have three dogs. It's just the two dogs that are going after each other. So sometimes what you'll get is you'll get a dog that matures into this more reactive, aggressive dog. And then they actually don't like any dog. They are aggressive to, in your case, it would be the 8-year-old dog. They would be aggressive and reactive to dogs on the walks or any dogs that you meet. It just seems like these two dogs are not getting along in the house. Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So what to do from here, in my experience and my opinion, my suggestions would be, the silver lining here and I think the upside here is it's not, it sounds to me from what you've told me is you can actually live a less stressed life. It's just sometimes when they do fight, it is very stressful. It's not happening every single second. So there's some dogs who are just downright mean and aggressive, and they will try to go after anything at any given point. This seems like more kind of building and frustration and, you know, like this sibling rivalry. The only thing that I'll add in here is a lot of times when you get like little spats, like just like with people, right? Like you guys and anybody else that you're around a lot, you're going to have little arguments. That's life. It would be weird if we didn't. Now, if you're having them every day or if it becomes physical, especially with dogs, obviously, where the dogs are actually causing harm, and that's what you're saying, is kind of like puncturing and scratching and really trying to hurt the other dog. I know that they're smaller dogs, so the damage isn't going to be as extreme as if it was a giant dog that can, you know, do more, right?
Right.
So with that being said, that also does change the dynamic in my eyes as well, is because some dogs will have these little spats that I was just talking about. They'll argue, or you'll see and hear all this like, and it looks like they're killing each other, and then they walk away with nothing. They're just, they, dogs do this like really aggressive sounding, really violent outburst towards each other, and they're not actually trying to hurt each other. They're just kind of like a hockey fight. They're kind of just latching on and giving each other little jabs in their helmets. They're not really trying to hurt you or fight you. And so that's, doesn't seem like that's the case, is they're actually, I don't know, going for blood, if you will. They're actually trying to hurt the dog, and you almost have to break it up in order for it to end. A lot of times with those other little spats or these little tiny fights, they end up.
Yeah, we definitely have to get involved and break them up. Albeit I'm probably not the best person to break up a fight, because the dogs, I guess I'm not afraid of the dog doing anything to me. So like when I see the one latched onto the other, like I just kind of jam my hand in her mouth to get her to stop biting the other dog. And once she realizes she's got me, then she stops. Mm. And like, I've been like scratched and stuff like that and a little bloodied myself, but she's like definitely like, the one dog's punctured the skin of the little dog a couple times, where
lots of scratch marks.
Yeah, like scratching on the belly. So I mean, like if we were to, we couldn't just let the fight end on its own volition,
right?
Without fear of somebody being seriously hurt at the end,
right?
Yeah, and that the little one definitely is seems to be going into more of a submissive, because when they do get more intense, if we're not close by, there's usually urine all over the place from the littlest, the one that's getting attacked, and it's everywhere. Sure. So she's definitely in the more submissive, like, I do this.
And do you find there is a consistent antagonist instigator in it? Do you find it that's consistent, or is it?
Yes.
So, I mean, the little dog, we suspect, Callie, yeah, the Callie, she seems to just put off the body language that irritates the other dog, Hazel. But I mean, that's like the only thing that we can kind of pinpoint is to like, okay, that's what's going on. But it just, it's not every time. It's not, you know, just like totally obvious to us as to what she's doing. And that's probably just because I think we don't know exactly how to interpret the body language that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, obviously your end goal would be to successfully live without fights. So that's an easy goal. I mean, that's an easy vision to have. Like, oh, this is our ultimate goal if we can decide. So here's what I would say is like dog owners like yourself in these situations become much less stressful and frustrated if you change this outlook and the way that you look at this. And so if you hire a trainer that says, like if you came to my facility, and I'm not saying anything about the trainer that you went to, I don't know them from Bob next door. All I'm saying is if you came to me with this talk that we've been talking for 15 minutes now, and you said, hey, my two dogs don't like each other, and you said, we're going to do a board and train, like our consulting process and our roadmap would be, there is absolutely zero guarantee that these dogs are going to like each other. And in fact, there's a good chance because they're already fighting as much as they are in the house that they're not going to like each other. However, the roadmap and the goal for me and my training facility would be to try to figure out if there are triggers, because oftentimes, let's say if you said, hey, they don't get along that great with each other, you shouldn't put them together, whatever. And then we had them at the facility and then they did great with each other. I'd say, okay, there's something going on with the house. So there is, I would say that there's a lot of ingredients into this recipe. But I think the main dish, if you will, the main thing is they probably just don't really like each other as much as they should and or as much as they need to coexist in a family without altercations, if you will. Which, I mean, again, I know that it's kind of sucks and it's frustrating, but I will say it is pretty common for these things to happen. My dogs, for an example, obviously my personal dogs as a professional, my big puppy, Burley, he wants to play and be a little puppy. And then she's eight. She's my older dog. She doesn't want anything really to do with him to play. But they have little tiffs. And by little tiffs, she turns around and corrects him every now and then. But that's normal dog behavior. That's, yeah, hey, idiot, you're 150 pounds and I'm not, so stop jumping on me type thing. Or it's, I just want to relax and you're trying to play with me and I don't want to. These are types of like little nips and they might cause a little blood or anything, but it's not a fight. It's not an attack. It's warranted, if you will. I don't really fret the small, I don't fret dog fights if it's warranted.
We're familiar. Like you said, we are two other dogs. One of them, I consider her to be the alpha.
Yeah.
100%. She was very much with our 8-year-old now, when we got her puppy, she would 100% do those kind of things where you kind of heard like the teeth chomping.
Yeah.
There were a couple times where there was contact, but it was quick. It was immediate. Just like, I'm over this. I'm not in the mood. Leave me alone. Go play somewhere else, puppy. So yeah, we're those kind of things. But yeah, the only other comment I was going to make is that right now the dogs have free reign of our house, whether we're home or not. And so that is something that's been interesting is, as far as we know, there's zero fights that occur when we are not in the home.
Mm.
But if we are in the home, there's random triggers that happen.
Yeah, it's really good insight for you and for me, and more for you, obviously, because this is your life. So that's something to think about. It's like, hey, like for an example, when we get a reactive dog and they're trying to, oh, my dog reacts to people, whatever. And then I take the leash and the dog doesn't react to people or with dogs. And I'm like, okay, well, so my point is you can say confidently with evidence in your hands that this dog actually isn't reactive to other dogs because they don't like dogs or whatever. It's just because of you. So,
yeah.
So your job's here and what to do and what you can do moving forward is, again, just really quickly, just changing your mindset of, we need to and I know that this has been like this, but I just feel like a lot of dog owners, they hire a trainer to fix the problem at hand when that's not fixable. If they don't like each other, then it doesn't matter how much money you have. There's just nothing you could do. But there are things that you can do to make it way less stressful, because at the end of the day, that's what is on your shoulders every day with the dogs that you love. So that's one thing, perfect information to look at to say, you know what? It's interesting that when we're gone and we're away, they've never gotten into a fight. But when we're there, they do. So common things that happen because of this, just you don't have to say whether you do them or not, just common things that triggers these things is overstimulation, things like coming inside of the house and yippee, I'm here, that creates all this little like frenzy of stimulation and arousement, and just this, they don't know where to put it and they redirect on each other, rah, 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 and they just, that's very common. And it goes in, it not just when you come home, but just in general. Like if you're on a work call and you're done and and it's, you know, from a professional standpoint, it's like I don't ever tell people like never do that, but I will say in your case, it could cause the things that you're dealing with. Because I could do it to like a certain type of dog and the other dogs in the house and they could care less. I could do it, you know. So it's very personality based. Like if I did it to my Mastiff, he would headbutt me and try to break my nose because he's excited. If I did that to my Shepherd, she would run to the door and say, let's go play. Like they're completely different personalities. So I'm just saying, if you get them to a point where they just want to tea kettle over and go, I don't know what to do with all this stuff, that's where you get these little like these dogs just kind of like hamstering for attention. And then that's where you get this frustration of redirection. That's very common. So just I'm saying these things to be mindful of. If you do these things or some of these things or a bit of these things, just be mindful of this is where the triggers are going to come from. You also, it's also attention and affection, which is kind of a degree of what I just talked about. But, and again, this is kind of this gray area of, I'm not saying never give your dogs attention or affection, but if you don't have a super healthy, balanced relationship with dogs, you could be making things worse. So let's say people always, the couch, I don't care if dogs sleep on your couch, in your lap, on your face, on your head, it doesn't matter to me. When it becomes a problem is when it becomes a problem. When you're like, you're on your couch watching a movie and another dog gets on the couch and there's a fight. I'm like, okay, that's not healthy. That's a problem. Or if you're in bed and your dog's sleeping in your bed and then your husband or your wife gets into bed and then they growl at them. Or if there's a dog that walks by the bed and then that's a problem. So these are all things to just be mindful of. Yeah. So those are things that you guys have to start ending if you want things. So you just have to like put it all like an investigation. You put it all on the wall and you go, okay, these are the five things that we see them get upset about. And you say, and it's up to you, right? Because I'm just, you know, consulting with, and that's all I ever do, is you just say, can we stop doing these things? Can we eliminate the trigger? It's like, man, every time I drink coffee, I have an allergic reaction. It's like, okay, well, it's up to you. You can stop and it won't ever happen again. It's completely up to you. So those are some triggers. Like if you guys can see those things of dogs becoming, you know, higher levels. So again, like because they're smaller dogs, pretty much everything, ottomans in your arms, on the couch, on the bed, these things are where they're kind of like, you know, butting heads and they can get competitive and then you're going to see these little spats. Okay. So those are things to be mindful of. The other thing is commonly happens often is just basic and classic resource guarding of food, toys. Food and toys are big. So think of where they're eating and how they're eating. So I just tell people, like, if you're having, like, my two dogs, again, they eat in separate rooms in different, like, one goes in a crate and the other one just goes in the living room. And that's just because they're animals. And if you put down food that they're all very excited about, you're just asking for it. I've never had any problems with my personal dogs. Like when my dog in the living room is done eating, she goes over and just sniffs around the crate as he's eating. And if there was going to be a problem, it's pretty much there. I mean, they're eating right next to each other. So those are things to be mindful of is, you know, where they're eating, because it can create tension. So much like human dynamics, dogs can also create tension. It becomes this tension for days where they're like, I am really getting on, you're really getting on my nerves. And then bang, something just little snaps them off. So just be looking for these little indicators and these little progressional builds of maybe they're not fighting at the time, but they stop and they turn and they snarl and they're like, you're pissing me off. I'm trying to eat, you know. Those are things that you should be looking for. And then obviously, again, like I said, toys. So objects around the house. Again, the question usually comes, Tom, should I never have I'm like, I don't care. Like, you can have whatever you want. But once it starts to be creating problems, that's when you have to be honest with yourself and go, because some people have a really hard time taking away things that they like. Because humans like to see their dogs be happy. So that if that means giving them a half a cow rib and their dog is like, you know, and we're like, oh, they love it. You know, I just worked all day. I feel bad. It's like kids, right? Like grandparents, perfect example. They want to be the star of the show and they want attention. And that's why grandparents spoil kids. So those are things to be mindful of. And each of one of those things also can be and has been in the past with my past clients been the reason why dogs fight. So even if you're doing one of those things, you could start eliminating that and starting to see results. Besides those protocols, the biggest thing that I would be focusing on besides those protocols is obedience. So your ability to kind of manipulate scenarios on a drop of a dime. So let's say this. Let's say you get both of the dogs that are in Callie and Hazel, right? Those are the two that we're talking about mainly. So let's say Callie and Hazel are in your kitchen or in the living room and you're cooking Thanksgiving meal or Christmas meal, whatever we're doing. And obviously you guys are both in the kitchen and they want to be next to you because they're your people and you're cooking really yummy stuff and all the smells are going on, all these things are happening. Naturally, these tensions are going to be created. Now, and it's all dynamic related, so every dog dynamic is going to be different, just as it is with people and just as it is with families and coworkers and so on and so forth. And so if you have two dogs that are sitting there kind of like, ooh, that's yummy, that's exciting, and the dogs are getting, you know, stimulated and getting excited about something and maybe even getting frustrated because they're not getting treats or whatever. You got to be mindful that if you can't tell your dog, Hazel, go to your bed, Callie, go to your bed. Like those are things that you can de-escalate situations on extremely easy without too much tension, right? Like I do that with my dogs all the time where we're just hanging out. And if I'm preparing, like they eat raw food, so it's a bigger process than just scooping kibble in. But regardless, it's an exciting time. Like, hey, we're eating, and if I see them kind of both in the kitchen getting excited or stimulated, I'll just say, Coda, go, and Burley, you go, and I just separate them because I'm just like, you're two animals, you're really close to each other, and I'm, you know, chopping up, you know, liver up here. I know that this is an exciting time. And so I'm separating them just because I want them to not have any issues. So that's the other thing too, is if you have, let's put it this way. If you have, sorry, go ahead. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, so yeah, we've been doing some of that. Mm-hmm. It's a similar kind of thing. And one of the challenges that we have is I don't know if I'm going to call it the follow through, but if we don't have a leash or something attached to them, they might not follow it as best as we want. And even if we do have a leash, it's kind of like getting the best timing to provide that correction because they left or they didn't go where we were asking them to. We've kind of hit those little points of like, okay, the bedroom, like on the bed, yep, that's a sensitive spot. Okay, let's manage this. The couch, okay, let's do this. Dinner time, nope, these are your guys' three spots. You're not allowed to come and get your food until we release you and you stay over here and you don't go to the other dogs. You know, once everybody's done eating and they've gone outside or whatever, you can go sniff bowls and verify you all ate the same food. But it's the being able to do what we're asking, I guess, is the lack of a better word when it comes to that participation.
Yeah, it's the ability to hold them accountable if they say no.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
Well, and I say, like, one of the questions that I've got is so obviously you just mentioned, you know, like obedience is, you know, one of the other kind of key things. I kind of maybe wrongly or rightly, I don't know, look at it and say, you know, Hazel, the bigger one, is the one that doing the attacking. Does it make more or less sense to say, you know, we need to focus our obedience on her specifically, or Callie, the little one, needs it just as much too, that it's a, it takes two to tango kind of thing, or
the whole pack?
Yeah.
Is it just if Hazel is super obedient, does that really address the situation?
It could. It absolutely could. I always tell people, if you have a man eater, but you have the best obedience, you can do anything and go anywhere because your dog listens to you, right? But I will say this, I want to get a little bit granular on you, especially if your dogs are not fighting when you're not around, which means your relationship with your dogs could be. That's what it's pointing to right now.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Like, if we were investigating this, we'd be like, what is the reason? Well, it seems like when we're not around, nothing ever happens. But when we're around, that's when every single incident has happened. So why does that happen? And to your point here that we're talking about obedience is when you develop obedience with a dog, you're not only developing a skill set of Hazel place stay or down stay or sit stay or heel or whatever. You're not only developing these, it's like with teaching kids please and thank you. It's not, you're just not telling them to say words. It has meaning behind it. Right? Somebody goes out of their way to do something for you, you say thank you. Like, you want them to know. So my point is with dogs, your relationship, it develops through training as well. And so my point being is the more training you do with the dogs, the more your relationship develops. So if that means what you were saying is very common too about you don't have the, right now you're asking your dogs to do something that they're not prepared to do. So there's different levels of obedience. I usually just make it super easy, like 1, 2, and 3. And right now you're asking your dog to do like a level of obedience that they're not able to do. So that means if you say, Hazel, go to your bed, and she may walk over there for 2 seconds and then look at you and realize you looked away, and then she stops and then comes back. That's two things. It's your obedience just isn't good enough to be asking the dogs to do that. And it's not a slap in the face, and it's completely normal. It's like you literally think about anything in the world and you go and you try to do it and you're like, I got to scale up. I got to do better at this. I got to, you know, whether it's running or shooting a bow or whatever. If you're like, okay, I'm going to try to do a really hard thing here and you fail. You're like, okay, well, I'm not good at this yet. I need to practice more. And then to your point of accountability, that's also your relationship. So you teach the dog the fundamentals. You know what place is. You know what stay is, whatever it is. And if you ask the dog to do it and they don't do it, that just means that, again, they may have not been prepared for that ask because you have to develop. I'm sure you guys did a board and train with both of them, so you've seen this before, is you have to develop the skill sets, you have to work on this, you have to rep these things. If you get a piece of food in your hand and a treat on a leash and you tell your dog to sit and they sit and you pay them, that doesn't mean that they're off running with their friends off leash in a park and you say sit, that they're going to sit. That takes levels to get to that point is what I'm saying. So there's part of, that's part of it, is they may go, well, I've never placed from 15 feet away with you at the sink doing dishes and me. I've never done that. They've never even seen that picture. So there's that. Okay. If you haven't pushed the threshold, it's more of a threshold. Like if you haven't gone the distance, again, yeah. if you haven't gone the distance of sending your dog 10 feet away, and then you just randomly do it because you did it with a leash on at training, to you it is the same, but to them it is not. And so that's the first thing about that. The second thing is the accountability. So you're like, no, I do this all day long, but now instead of having the leash on the dog, I'm turned away cooking dinner, and it's a completely different thing. And that's where the different styles of training come into play. So let's say, and that's just, again, that's advancement, but you also have to make sure that your dogs at a micro level are getting held accountable for all the things that you're doing. So let's say you ask your dog to sit, and this is like out of context here, but let's say you have one dog on the leash and you're just training in general, and you say, Hazel, sit. She puts her butt on the ground, and then you pair her with food, and then you do it again. And then the next time you do it, you say, Hazel, sit. And she goes, yeah, but there's a fly. Or yeah, but there's a bird. Or yeah, but there's another. And she's looking around, and the worst case thing for her is you tell her to sit again. And so my point is her map in her head is going to go, the absolute worst case scenario for me is I just get asked to sit again, and you're making chicken, or you're making steak, or you're making whatever. So there's that part of your relationship too, is if you're not holding your dogs accountable to an actionary point where they actually care about it, like with a slip lead or, you know, whatever. There's so many different ways to give his dogs accountability and consequences for just completely blowing you off. And, you know, it's a very granular conversation. But my point is that is a very, so many dog owners I talk to, my dog pulls me on the leash. My dog, outside of knowing the behavior, it's because their dog just flips them off. They go, what are you going to do about it? And you go, I'm just going to ask you again. So two things happen there. So for an example, let's say with Hazel, go to your place. 2 feet this way? I don't want to. And you're working on something, right? You can't stop what you're doing and go do this. So two things is your relationship suffers because she's like, it's the kids. You told me to do something and I said no, and you just were too busy to care. So there's that. That starts opening up. Oh, wow. I can get away with stuff if whatever. And then, of course, because you wanted Hazel to go place, because you can feel this tension starting to rise, something could happen. So at the end of the day, it's a lose-lose. So think about that too, just as you guys are moving forward, is that's what I would be working on with you guys particularly. You come into my facility and you say, my two dogs are fighting. And I go, okay, let's put one away for a minute. Let's get Hazel out. I want you to heal Hazel from here to here and put her in a sit. And then likely people have a really hard time with just the basic ones and twos. And I go, okay, so if this is a product of your relationship, so when I say this, people are like, what does that mean, Tom? When you say your relationship is the reason why your dog is X, Y, and Z, I talk about this. You don't hold your dog accountable, which can damage their confidence, and or they just don't care that you're there. It's like a parent that just says, stop fighting you two. Versus like actually holding them accountable and giving them consequences for trying to hurt each other. So there's the relationship aspect, and there's the training aspect. And I would be solely working on your relationship, just seeing how you interact with your dogs. Do they look at you? Do they engage with you? Do they respect you? How many times do you have to ask them to do something before they do it? And or do you need, you know, a Lunchable to get them to sit? I mean, just basic stuff. Like, these are all things that really contribute to why dogs could, in your case, be completely fine without you. And then when you're there, all that stuff happens.
So with the training, so I feel like our dogs are totally different on leash versus off leash. So like you just mentioned, like I could get Hazel, I could have her heel, I could have her sit down on the leash. The minute we get some distance, the minute the leash is dropped and I'm not actually attached to it.
Yeah.
You get the, whatever. Like you said, the flip you off mom, whatever. Mm. You can't provide a consequence, so I can do what I want.
Right.
That's one of the things that I've observed with all three of them, actually, in training, but even with her, probably more so.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's common. Like, the leash is the thing that holds the dog accountable. So if you say sit and they don't, and you kind of give them a little pressure on the leash, they're like, ugh, fine. Right. There's two things, though, that commonly
learn that matter whether there's a leash there or not.
Yeah. There's definitely ways you can do that. It's advanced, right? But it's also just how you're, I could go to the low hanging fruit and say, yeah, the remote collar gives you the ability to hold dogs accountable anywhere. But yeah. I would also say that it's also on your training too. So a lot of dogs, they aren't used to being away from their owners. And we can point fingers at the leash, which it is the leash. Like, the physicality of the leash is like when I'm, that's what you're seeing. But a lot of times when dog owners, like the proximity of dogs being close to people or their handlers is actually like where a lot of the training comes from. You've never given them a command across the room.
Got it.
You know what I mean? So it's like there's a little bit of both go on. Okay. I think they're both right in my experience, as they both been right. Is we haven't conditioned the dog to advance the obedience. So they're just not used. So typically for me, regular leash, long line, remote collar. So the long line starts. So let's say you're on for an example, if you have your 4 foot or 6 foot leash on and you say, Hazel, come. And she's like, nope. And you pop the collar or you pop your leash. She's going to go, oh, sorry, come back. That's normal. Now, then you get the 20 foot long line. Now you're 20 feet away. And you say, come. And she's like, nope. And then she's like, what? I've never listened to you. You've never touched me from this distance, you know, with the long line. Yep. And B, you've never even asked me to do. So you've never held me accountable away from you. Like, that's new. I've always had to be next to you for that. So sometimes it's also just a product of just being fair, is dogs also are so used to learning and listening, getting paid and being held accountable so close to us, that it's this foreign process once you're away from one another. And it's almost like our fault where we're like, oh, you've never even, because dog owners commonly, and I think it's fair for them to do, is they just assume all the behaviors are all the behaviors no matter where you're at. I'm like, yeah, but the 3 D's of dog training is distance, distraction, and duration. So just because you learned how to ride a bike doesn't mean you can enter the Tour de France. There's levels to this game, right? And I think a lot of dog owners like yourself, you're like, oh, we did this board and train. My dog knows sit, down, stay, heel, or leave it, or whatever. But when they're around other dogs or in the house or off leash or away from us, this is when it – so then you're going, well, my two dogs are fighting and I've done the obedience, but the obedience isn't working. Now what do we do? And I'm like, wait a minute. You've done the obedience, but you're missing the biggest picture here. And the biggest picture is understanding that in order to get your dog to the advanced point, you have to do the advanced work.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's just a process to get to chain them to, you're chaining them together. You're accumulating. Yeah. This process. And it's frustrating for me because, and I think I love being this consulting type person, is because sometimes dog trainers don't explain it that way. They're like, we did all the, they bring your dog out and show you, we did the heel, the place, the sit, the stay. You go home first night, you're so excited, you pick up your dogs and one of them's on the couch and you're over here and you say, come, the dog doesn't move. You're like, son of a, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's completely different. It's like your dog kind of learned in this clinical environment that yes, they understand it, but it's not reality. It's not like a real kitchen. You know what I mean? You're not, it's not the same.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's like they act one way in the house on the leash, in the backyard on the leash, at the park on a leash, all three of them different scenarios. And it's like, it's the same thing. Me, leash, dog. But like, traction, the environment, it's, it's all different varying levels of stuff that make a difference. So, yeah. Did you want to show that one video with Hazel going after Penny that we can't figure out the behavior?
Sent you an email, at least to the email that I got when I booked the appointment, and sent you a link to a couple of videos that we have gotten of the dogs. I don't know if that's something that you've got access to or not. It was what she was asking to show
and
you.
I didn't know if it was valuable to kind of see some of the...
Curious, are you seeing anything like video-wise on your screen?
Yep.
So this is like the... That's Hazel crouching around. She's wanting to go lick Penny in the face, and like I said, Penny didn't care for that in the least bit, and she'll growl at her, but like Hazel doesn't respond to it at all.
So Callie,
what's happen here shortly is, so there's Callie, she's come around the corner, and I guess this is like the one example. So boom, go around the corner, like just a fight started, and now they're all going after each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the only example we've got of like, we're nowhere to be seen, except in this example, like Karen had been kind of going back and forth through the hallway, moving some stuff.
Yeah, I was just moving things. I was moving stuff around the house,
mm-hmm.
But I was.
Do you think
on the couch, there was no food. This like middle of the day.
Oh, I don't know what I just did. Do you think it's about like whatever that is, like that toy there?
Oh no, that's our just a round thing that we were using for touch from your.
Oh, okay.
Training.
Can you? Oh, I see what you're saying. I see it now. Can you hit play again? Can you play it again?
Yeah.
So this is one of the this is the older dog and Callie.
Hazel. So the one walking around is Hazel, and the one laying down is Penny. That's our 8-year-old.
Okay, and then the black dog is Callie that comes out. That's the dog you guys just had in your lap.
Yes.
Okay, so they're in like your living room area, and the older dog and Hazel are just chilling, and Hazel's kind of like submissive here.
Yeah, she licks Penny in the face all the time, and Penny growls at her, which is what brought the black dog, Callie, around the corner.
Yep.
And then Hazel was walking off for some reason, and then, boom, just got triggered, and then you can see Penny went after her, and I separate them.
Yeah, I think that's just, I think the growl, I don't know, it's tough to say what that is. If I were to guess... because that's really all this is, really, with anybody, I would say that it was the growl that, like you already said, it's the growl that popped her up, and she came over, and then she just, I think because she doesn't let, she has a problem with her in the first place, she's looking for any type of opportunity to go after her, and so that one little growl just tipped her over the edge, and I think that that's what that was, because there's no reason for her to do that.
So what is... Is there a dog behavior reason, if you want to call it that, of why Hazel's kind of licking Penny in the mouth? And
yeah, that's actually like a very that's a very submissive, lovey thing there, actually.
She does it all the time, and like, and especially when she gets excited.
Yeah, especially to
home or something happens.
Yeah,
that's where she.
Yeah, that's a very, like, the little tail flicking and the ears completely pinned back, and she's getting as low as she can, and she's almost like flopping on her back because she's being so submissive. Like, she's like really getting as small as she can, and she's just being as juvenile and as puppy as she can to say, like, hey, I am really the small. She's playing. She's like self-deprecating almost. Like she's like, I am the smallest, littlest, harmless little thing here, and I just want to kiss you, type thing. It's actually like a very, I guess submissive would be the right word for it, but it's a very like loving thing. I my dogs will do that sometimes. Over the years, I've seen that.
She doesn't respond to Penny growling at her and kind of being like, "Yeah, great."
That's what I'm saying is like Penny should have just did like a little correction there to say, hey, knock it off, or walked away. And that's why I think Callie had come over and was like, I'll fight you then. If she won't, I will. Like that's almost what it seemed like is Hazel was like, I love you. Like, let's play. And you can just tell, like, the older dog, Penny, was like, nah, I'm good. Just stoic, standing still, not moving. And then she's like, I don't like this. I don't like this. Get out of here. And to me, it just looks like Hazel's just being, like, annoying. Like, hey, I love you. I'm in your face. I'm licking your jowls. I'm on top of you. I'm like this cute little puppy. Look, look, look. I'm rolling over. I'm peeing on myself. Look. And then the older dog was like, you're annoying me, and growled and vocalized. And then Callie came over. It's again, it's like a hockey fight. It's like, nah, I'm not going to fight you. And then all of a sudden somebody off the bench comes out and they're like, I will. I love fighting. You know, I don't know. It's tough to really say, but if I were to guess, that's exactly what that looked like to me.
Okay.
Gotcha. Here's like another like example. There's like, it's like, obviously I'm on the ground playing with the dogs and you know, they're just kind of sitting there looking at each other, and all of a sudden just like, bam, it's like, don't really kind of know like what it was other than just like, is it bad body language? Cause it's like,
it could have been you. It could have been you too. Like if you rewind it, because so see how, what is that? Hazel sits in front of you.
In front of you, yep. Yep. Yeah. She's guard, yeah. She's done that a couple of times with me. Yeah. I usually just get up, walk away.
Yeah, you have to. So again, like, you know, I'm a realist. I'm not, you know, nobody knows really for sure. But if I were to guess, I would say that you're sitting on the ground throwing the ball and Hazel plops down in front of you and kind of just sits there, and then she lunges towards Callie, and that's what I would guess, is you become the possession there. Get away from Dad, especially when you're on the ground. So those are like the types of things that I was talking about, is just being mindful of, if you're on the ground and a dog wants to come and sit next to you, like, again, every single dog is different, and that's why I would say to some people, who cares if dog sits next to you when you're on the ground? But in this case, it's a little bit different, because it seems like she was almost sitting in front of you saying, like, this is my dad.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just what it looks like.
The
only way that I would be able to say exactly, or in these contexts, is if it was consistent. If I saw, like, the same behavior four times in a row, I would say, okay, you're on the ground, she gets in front of you, boom, she attacks.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay.
And that's where you kind of shoo the dog off and go, yep, nope, don't get it. Like, move out of here. Like, don't let the dog basically attach themselves. So we see this a lot with reactive dogs, is they get right in front of the dog owner. And dog owners don't even realize it. I'm like, don't let that insecure, nervous, protective dog in front of you, because you're just setting them up for failure, because they're just going to launch at whatever they feel like. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I know we've only got a little bit of time left. I guess my question for you is, so what do you think would be a proper roadmap at this point in time for us to kind of start moving in the direction of, because I guess the last thing I want to do is have to, you know, think that our only hope here is rehoming Hazel. But I don't want to just blatantly say that that's not an option. Like to avoid that if
we
possible.
Want a happy home for everybody. Mm-hmm. If the answer is Hazel and Callie are going to constantly fight and it's not healthy and happy for either, then they're going to end up with PTSD.
Right.
Then I would say the best bet is to find another home for Hazel where she can be happy and comfortable and not looking to fight. But if we can keep them all together in our pack, then that's the perfect scenario for us.
Yeah, it's a great question. A couple ideas. Obviously, rehoming is the easiest way, but a couple of things is separating them more often is going to decrease and or potentially eliminate the fighting. If that means baby gates or crating or whatever, like that's normal. That's what a lot of people have to do. So there's that, just keeping them kind of separated. There's no rhyme or reason. You just do what we call crate and rotate. So we're, and it doesn't have to be all the time. It's not like they can't ever be around each other. It's just maybe they need time away. Or if you want to get on the ground and play fetch with one of the dogs and you're like, you're going to pop the other dog away because you are going, I know that this is going to be stimulating and I'm going to be 100% successful. You're going in your crate and I'm going to go do this. Boom, done. Easy.
Yeah.
So there's that, right? You guys aren't separating them at all and two dogs are fighting. And that's like one of that's like the first thing that you start doing is you go, okay, you're fighting. Now you're separating because you're obviously not making good decisions around each other. So you are limited to the access that you have with each other, period.
Okay.
And in some cases, there's dogs who are separated always. They never go in contact because people, they fight really bad. They're bigger dogs and it's dangerous, right? You have, I know that it doesn't change anything with how you feel, but it is an advantage having them not killing each other basically because they can't. Well, they could, but you know what I mean? It's, they're not, you know, giant dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing is you know, doing more constructive things with them. So like outletting is huge. So if you have two dogs that are frustrated and agitated and maybe, and in this case, don't like each other or, you know, don't prefer each other, or at least like in that case, like what I was saying earlier is it just seems like Callie's like, I don't really like this other dog, or Hazel's like, I don't really like this dog. Any type of opportunity to drop the gloves, they're like, yep, let's go. And that's what I think I saw there. And so again, the more you go out and exercise physically and mentally, so that means training mentally and also exercising nice good walks, the less likely they are to be reactive and have these issues. It's the same thing with any dog, right? If again, my mastiff, he's, if I walk him, I know he's different when I walk him and when I don't. Completely different dog. And it's my fault if he chews on something. I'm like, he hasn't got enough today. The other thing would be, you know, I would safely say that you have not corrected either of them at the time when they do it, which is huge. Hey, Tom, I'm at a point where I'm thinking about rehoming the dog, but I've never corrected the dog for the action. It's like, okay, let's start there. How? It would be, my suggestion would be remote collar. It's because it's the only thing in the world that allows you to do that. You're standing around at home and you're just kind of waiting for something to happen. And then you correct the dog for trying to hurt the other dog. That's completely fair and warranted. If you have one dog that's just being a bully, and it could be the case, you have one dog that's like, I have a free for all because that's just my life. Once you actually correct it and shut it down and make it uncomfortable for the dog to even think about doing it, they think about doing it. That's how that goes. Just like with human behavior, it's the no different from animal behavior. Well, last time I did that, this happened. I might not do that again. So again, like when we're at the last stages of like we're really running out of options here, those are things that I would start really putting forth. And again, I think it would be also leveling up your obedience, which would include remote collar training. We're not just going to slap an e-collar on a dog and correct them if they do something wrong, although you could, because it's warranted. Like I always tell people, the only time that you use the e-collar as an aversive or as a correction without any conditioning or know-how is if it's dangerous behavior. If they're trying to hurt another dog or they're trying to hurt a person, I don't care how they feel about it. I don't care if they know what it is. I don't want them to do that again. And it's a warranted correction because their life depends on it, and potentially others. So my recommendation would be start the process of doing advanced training because that's going to be helpful. So in that situation there where you're hanging out with the dogs, Hazel, go to your place, stay. You couldn't do that because your obedience isn't good enough to allow you to do that. Right. But you could, if you saw that you're like, yeah, this is getting a little sticky. Hazel, go to your place. Boom. Yeah, I do that all the time with my dogs when I have people over. I have a little, I have a small area that we all hang out in and there's cups and glasses and food and cheese and go to your bed, go to your bed, stay there. Like, you know what I mean? So again, like if you have that control. So I think that there's huge things here is, you know, for homework is you guys figuring out the triggers if you can. Also understanding that your obedience isn't good enough to really do the things that you need to do to decrease the reactions. Yep. And then also neither of them have ever actually been broken up. Hey, no, don't do that again. Let me at him. Nope. They've actually not getting punished when they do it. which could change everything. Even just like a vibration on one of those collars, if they decided to get nasty like that. What the? And they run away and they hide under a bed. You're like, yeah, that's one. Yeah. Just like positive reinforcement. Every time you put your butt in the ground when I say sit, you get paid. Well, guess what? You want that to happen again? Well, every single time you try to go after your sister, this thing happens. They're like, I don't want to ever do that again. Perfect. Now we're living, you know?
Yeah.
So that would be my homework for you guys, is to do all those things. I think that's like four or five good things to start with.
Okay. Certainly. We will certainly do that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. Okay, guys, good luck. And I think that there's a good amount of things, in my opinion, that are very key to solving this problem that you haven't done yet, which is good. It's not like you guys are telling me all the things that I would already recommend. You're not doing that yet. So that's good. That means that you haven't done the things that I'm like, these are non-negotiable. Like, these, you have to start here. And you're like, oh, I haven't even done that yet. So that's good, because you're not, you know, sometimes when I talk to people, they're like doing every single thing that I would recommend. And I'm like, okay, they don't like each other. So you either separate them for the majority, or you get rid of one. Those are really your only other options. You guys haven't really gone, you haven't, in my opinion, looking out, you haven't started the process yet.
Okay.
With this. Okay. I mean, you've done training, which is good. And you've done board and trains, which is good. It's a healthy start, because now you know what your dogs are capable of. But you also know that your dogs are taking advantage of you when you tell them to do something, because they know how to do it. Yep. So yeah. I think you guys need to start. Don't just try to attack. I want them to get along. That's not going to happen.
Okay.
You know, it's okay. More about how can we make, what is it that's really stressing you out? Them fighting, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
The easiest answer would be, well, if they got along, they wouldn't fight. But there's a good chance they're not going to, you know, always just like each other. They're fighting for a reason. So your objective would actually be to make the scenarios in the environment that you're in more successful for them. You know, because I can look at those videos and go, well, this is what's happening. First video, they should be separated when you're not home. Second video is the possession of you, right? Those are two videos that I would say, oh, yeah, I can see those things happening. So
Okay. That's
where to start. And then it's a process, right? I mean, this is just an hour consult of like, how do we change our lives with our dogs? I mean, there's so much more you can do. So there's resources out there. There's trainers out there. So this is just the very beginning to kind of jumpstart. This is a direction you need to go into. Okay?
Yeah. Sense.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, we'll leave the door open to do this again sometime in the future.
Sure. Absolutely. I'll be here.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
All right, guys. Yep. Good luck. Bye.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.